All right, here we go. Thank you once again for being here and Ask the Mayor. It's our third week of the month in September, and we always meet with Bloomington Mayor John Hamilton. Again, thanks for taking the time out of your busy day. So much going on.
Always good to be with you, Joe. Thanks for getting this covered. I like
it. Now, this is on the radio, so no one can see your desk. but like I say, the mayor is always worried about how messy his desk is. But as I say, it's always about how much you have on your plate. And there's a lot going on. So we have a number of things we'd like to get to, and a few emails, too, that we have from our listeners. I did want to touch upon the unfortunate situation. We had two city employees resign for missing large containers that went missing from the water treatment plant. And the reason why it's a big deal is those are worth estimated around $10,000 in the salvage market. But these were long-term employees.
Well, each container is worth about $50 or $70. The issue was, and this had been going on for many years, and I just found out it was through Vic Kelson, the new head of the City of Bloomington Utilities, and he's doing a great job there. And they through the normal course of events, found out that these kind of 3-foot by 3-foot chemical containers that were used to deliver containers to the drinking water plant had been, they're really salvaged. The company won't take them, won't pay you for, there's no deposit on them. You don't get any money back for it. They're kind of a pain. They're big and bulky, but they have some value. And in our world, in our system, before anybody can take them or declare them salvaged, they have to go through a process. And for 10 years or more, the utilities department hadn't been doing that. And individual, at least one, had been just taking them away. Again, they were salvaged in many ways. We couldn't get any money for them, but they could be sold through eBay or something like that, and that's what this individual did. Well, that's not kosher in public sector. Maybe it's okay in companies for that sometimes to happen, but we have systems, and they didn't do that, and the individuals responsible stepped up and resigned, and I'm sorry to see them go. We'll certainly... this was not a, I want to be careful, this wasn't somebody doing something in the dark of night and stealing in a way, I would say. It was sloppy and shouldn't have been done, and we have to have tighter systems, and I'm glad Vic has put that in place there.
I see where the city is looking at issuing permits over Airbnbs, and for those who don't know, it's a way for local residents, you can rent out your guest room or even your entire house and make a few extra bucks on the side. So how did this come about? Why is the city now looking at issuing permits for these Airbnbs?
Well, Joe, we actually already have, I think, something like 100 people, 100 premises doing this in the city. Airbnb, of course, most people know, has been around for a number of years. You may have used it. I've used it. I know people who've used it. And it's a good thing in our community, I think. We'll work with City Council. This will take an ordinance, and we want to make sure that we safely review the Airbnb. We're one of the few cities in Indiana that's allowed to do rental inspections. The state took that away, but we already had it in place, so they let us continue. We do rental inspections to make sure all the rental properties in the city are safe, habitable. And Airbnb, like a hotel or a rental, we want to make sure it's a safe and that you have a great experience when you come to Bloomington. Now, I will say I heard another mayor talking about a different issue with Uber, said you either can put up the red tape or you can roll out the red carpet for a new company and a new approach like this. I do think it's real important for Bloomington to be a place where new technologies, new approaches like Airbnb are welcomed. They help us be a modern, evolving city, so we want to do it right. So we're looking at how to make sure everything's safe.
Is there a big difference between, in your mind, a personal residence for a night or weekend or a year-long rental?
Yes, there is. I mean, Airbnb, we want to be sure, an Airbnb is an intermittent and episodic and occasional use. If it was a year-long always rented as Airbnb, that looks more like a hotel or a guest house. So we're trying to draw that line appropriately. We want to help people. Look, it's a good thing. It's sustainable, actually, to use all the stuff that we have. If you have a bunch of empty houses sitting around and people who would like to use that house, It's good for that to get together. We just have to do it smart, make sure we're not turning what somebody could use as a small revenue generator into a guest house. So we'll try to draw those lines right.
Does the city get complaints from residents saying, you know, my neighbor is using their condo, which would be a little bit more, I guess, right, within the realm of possibilities, as a kind of a revolving door of as a hotel? Is that a big issue here?
Well, I haven't heard those. You know, we certainly hear it's kind of like you might get somebody who's concerned about somebody operating a business in a neighborhood. Hey, you know, if you give a couple piano lessons, that's one thing. If you have, you know, 50 people a week coming through and you're running a counseling session out of your home, that's another. And so I think we always want to be sensitive to those issues, protecting the livability in the neighborhoods that we have. But on the other hand, we want to help people make a living, use, you know, kind of the shared economy is getting more and more important as the barriers for that come down with the internet and the ability to connect people who are interested in rides or in sleeping over or houses or those kinds of things. So we'll try to be smart. The council will help as they set up that kind of ordinance. But Bloomington, we want to be a community where these new technologies and these new approaches can get hold and help make our community stronger.
Hey, there's been progress in the Trades District as the tech office plan now for Dimension Mill, IC, is starting to really move forward, pick up steam. How do you feel that communication has been with these tech firms now that we're starting to see progress in the Trades District?
Well, you know, it's interesting. Part of this job is there are a lot of things going on, as you mentioned at the beginning, and in a lot of ways, they never move as fast as you wish, hope. I'm very pleased that the tech park is accelerating and moving. I think we made the right decision a year ago not to do one large building in the tech park. We knew that would mean it's going to be a more organic growth. Dimension Mill's the first piece of that puzzle, and I'm really excited about the prospects for that. It's going to be an incredible building, asset, beehive of activity. We're definitely talking to other potential investors who want to be in the Trades District, and you know, this stuff builds over time, and I'm pleased with the momentum and excited. I think that's going to be just a fantastic part of our community in the years and decades ahead.
There was also a proposal for some housing. What's the timeline on that?
We're very pleased. There's really a cutting-edge affordable housing that's going to be built in the Tech Park just west of Rogers Street next to the trail, the Beeline Trail. From really, it was there's a program to pick two sites in the whole state to put a very high efficient, energy efficient, transit oriented, low income housing units to try this kind of new model. And they looked for two places in the state and they picked us, which we're excited about. It'll be about 36 units right on the trail, right in the Trades District. They've got the site located and they're doing the design work right now.
And when would people start seeing maybe some movement there? Is that next year?
I think it'll be 2017 until we see physical activity there. I could be wrong, but I think it'll be 2017.
Okay. You know, I've been keeping up with this renewal of a bond proposal that I read would generate about, was it $20 million?
Give or take, $18, $20 million. Yeah.
Can you explain how that works? Some people may wonder how a bond, and now all of a sudden the city has $20 million, but you're paying that back over a period of years.
So this is a... This is really a pattern the city has had for a number of years where we have, if you think about it, it's just kind of a steady payment that we make each year to cover a bond that then lets us primarily maintain our parks and maintain our streets and physical infrastructure. And, you know, we've got over 40 parks, and every one of them, their playgrounds wear out periodically, and they need updating and upgrading, and all that takes money. We have a certain amount per year that we spend on that, but what we find is it's helpful to borrow against that so we can kind of front load that work. The borrowing that we've done on that 15 years ago is getting paid off, but our income, that every year payment is still set in our budget, and I think it's prudent to keep that. What that does mean is we can now re-borrow, if you will, against that same flat income stream. So we're not really changing anything that we're spending. We're spending the same amount each year. We're just able to reborrow because we paid off the old ones. Kind of like second mortgage on your house, or I don't know the right analogy, but this is just basic upkeep. It's part of the capital upkeep that we need to do.
And I believe City Council is going to take a look at this for a vote on Wednesday night.
They will, very shortly.
And it seems like one of the areas they're not quite certain on is the money being used for the sanitation department. Have you been able to talk with them a little bit more since the last meeting, and are they more on track on what they want that money to be used for?
I'm hopeful they will support that. I've been talking with City Council, and I think we've cleared up some of those issues. I announced a few weeks ago the need for the changes in sanitation, and there are really two things that I said we need to do right away. Number one, we've got trucks that are wearing out, and we've got to replace them. And we need to replace those trucks with something that can lift the garbage up and the recycling by mechanical power rather than human power, because we are hurting our employees. We have an old model. Every day that our employees are out there, they're lifting thousands and thousands of pounds of trash up and down and getting huge workers' comp bills. So that means replacing those 10 trucks over the next 4 years. And the second thing is, if you're going to automate that lifting of the trash, you have to have uniform trash receptacles. That makes it much easier. So I think the city, I'm encouraging and I'm hopeful that the City Council will support the purchase of the new trucks over a four-year period, and the purchase of the carts, the roller carts that we will provide to each household.
I-69, it looks like workers are back at it. Is that true?
Have you heard? I have personally not seen it, but I have read and understand that Kreider and Kreider, the earthwork and kind of earth moving folks, are back on the job as of yesterday. When did they go back? I think Monday. And I'm pleased about that. We need the people to get the job done. I'm still frustrated that the delays appear to be long and that we face a lot of construction. And I'm frustrated that the leadership in Indianapolis has let this get so delayed and snafu'd, and we have beautiful weather and nobody working on the road. But I'm glad people are back working. I'm hopeful that that will be a continuous work and that we can get this done as quickly as possible.
We heard, but we haven't been able to confirm, that the new completion date is now October 2017. Have you heard anything?
I have also heard that the state and the governor and his administration have announced a new completion date 4 months later than the date that they delayed to already once, to October next year, more than a year from now. The road should have been done in a month. And now it looks like it's at least 13 months. I'm concerned that we make sure we get good transparency about what's happening. Why did it get delayed? Because, Joe, it was just a month ago that we asked the state to come down and talk to us, and they said, oh, there's no reason we can't be done in June 2017. And then a month later, it's now October 2017. So it's frustrating.
Mm-hmm. You've been one. You've had press conferences. You've been really kind of ringing the bell per se to try to figure out what's going on. Do you feel like you've made any progress? Have you gotten any more answers?
Well, I wouldn't say that I've gotten answers. I'm glad to see the workers are back on the job, and I think the attention that Matt Pierce, their state rep, and I and others, many people have expressed frustration that we had this road that's ready to be built and there's nobody working on it. I'm glad that people are back working on it. I don't feel confident yet that we have a transparent relationship on what's happening. I do think the delays have not been due to weather. They've not been due to unforeseen physical circumstances. They've been due to management and operational controls, and that's very frustrating because I've been in government before. I know big projects can have surprises. But you need transparency and you need strong execution to get it done.
We have some questions from listeners who emailed in today. Three of these are sort of the same, so I'm going to try and kind of get them all together. And I think it's obvious that these came from a little plug for our station. As you've, I'm sure, have heard, we're premiering a documentary on heroin use throughout the Midwest.
Yes.
With thanks to you and the city, we were able to do a premiere last Saturday here at City Hall. Thanks again for letting us use
the building.
We had a great Yes, yeah. It went well. We had a great turnout, but it elicited some questions for the city from Jesse, Kate, and Asara. Mainly what they're asking is, what is the city doing? And this is kind of a general question to begin with, to address the drug issue. Is there a community-driven task force exploring options? What's the response from the city in terms of drug use?
Well, there's a lot going on, and of course the city is part of this, as are the county and the health department and the state and the national government, frankly, and all of us and nonprofits and others. This is a big issue. You know, Joe, I did a press conference 6 weeks ago or so in front of the library downtown, in large part concerned about what we're seeing in our community. We here in Bloomington, and we're not alone, we across the country are seeing really significant problems arising from drug use, drug addiction, heroin, and synthetic materials and heroin, methamphetamines, of course, for years. Indiana has been on the front lines of that battle. I think my view is we've got to have more investment in healthcare, prevention, detox centers. We now have distribution of free needles to try to diminish the chance of some of these diseases spreading. We're working, I've created, we created a group of people, a task force, to really look at safety, civility, justice in our city, which certainly connects right up with the drugs. You know, our firefighters now carry Narcan because we find so many heroin addicts and overdoses where that can save a life. We've had to use it twice in one day on one person because of the drug culture that's hit. Drug addiction is a disease. It needs treatment. We need to be sensitive to that. Mental illness is a part of the problem, and we need to provide services that way. Most of those services are really federal and state paid. We need to make sure they're as strong here as they can be. This is not a simple problem. We're not going to snap our fingers and go have it go away. You can't arrest your way out of the problem. It's public health, and we are a partner in that and working really hard on it. And we welcome ideas. This task force will be inclusive of law enforcement and social services and healthcare and government and private citizens thinking about how do we make progress on this.
You mentioned too that Jesse talked about too about naloxone use and the needle exchange. Do you have a stance on those forms of?
Well, for me, we follow the public health recommendations on this. And again, I think treating this as a challenge, it's again, you can't arrest your way out of this problem. So both of those, needle exchanges and the Narcan, is a recommended response from the public health professionals, and I listen to that. That means that's what we ought to be doing.
Kate just had a little further question about organizations such as the Indiana Recovery Alliance. Do you also see yourself, and of course the task force, reaching out to these organizations?
Absolutely, I'm meeting with them this week, and we're meeting with healthcare providers, mental health providers, addiction services, faith communities, law enforcement professionals, business owners in the area, economic development and social service partners, absolutely. Because, you know, this issue, this cuts across all kinds of aspects of our community, and we're going to have to wrestle with it, and we are.
Sara has one more specific question about police officers that arrest participants of the needle exchange for possession of syringes, and wondering why they're doing that when the prosecutor then does not charge the individuals because they are participants of the needle exchange. Is that an issue that's come up with
you? Joe, I just heard of that issue of, which doesn't quite make sense to me, that if you're giving out needles, you then arrest somebody for possessing them. I don't know that that's happened. I know that our law enforcement personnel are not going to make arrests that are automatically not leading to prosecutions for the heck of it, and I don't know that it's happening at all, but we will be looking at it. I certainly know, as a community, we've embraced the public health response of free needle, And if there are legal adjustments that need to be made in light of that, we'll certainly look at that.
All right, and we have one more question from Paul, changing subjects here. He wants to know about the enforcement of speed limits on streets. Mm-hmm. He has a statistic. Now, I don't know if this is correct. You might know, or we may need to double check. He says that the police department issued 146 speeding tickets in 2015, according to Chief of Police Michael Dekoff. In other words, he's saying that's like one ticket every 2 days. And he's concerned about speeding in Bloomington. Mm-hmm. Do you have a response to that?
Well, I share the commitment to safe streets. My wife and my kids and anybody who rides with me will tell you that I actually drive the speed limit. It really hit home to me when I ran the environmental department and I spent my day driving around the state and talking and enforcing rules against companies for things they didn't think they were safety rules about environmental protection. And I said, well, if I'm enforcing them, I better follow safety rules myself. And so I know that, you know, if a pedestrian gets hit at 40 miles an hour, there's a significant chance they're going to die if they get hit by a car. If they get hit by a car going 25 miles an hour, they're very likely going to survive. Safety is really very important to me in our community. I can't affirm those figures, but I think it's good to look at those figures. And as you know, I've focused on transparency and making sure people know what is happening in the city. The biggest factor we want to know is what's the speed, average speed of people driving through the city. There's a lot of move to lower from 30 to 25 miles an hour, our speed limit throughout the city. Keep people calm, keep them running safe, but getting around as they need to. And I appreciate the email. I'll be looking at that. I think Bloomington works well because it's a community that welcomes walkers and bikers, and it feels comfortable being in the community, and that's critically important. You know, we want to make sure we look at accident data, we look at average speed data, and ticket data is one of those factors too.
Anything else you'd like to add? We had a full plate today.
We did have a lot going on. Well, yeah. You know, it's an exciting city. We just finished Lotus Weekend, for example, which was, I got the chance to be reminded what a wonderful treat it is to have people from all around the world. You know, I got to hear people from Poland and Mongolia and Iceland and Brazil, you know, in one evening, and the streets were teeming with people of all ages and dancing in the streets. It was great, and it reminds you of what a treat it is to be in Bloomington. So kudos to the Lotus Festival folks who pulled it off again, and we'll look forward to talking to you next month again.
All right, thank you very much.